Hi, it's Bill Teeple and Alan Cobb and Don Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio. It seems like art and art appreciation should be a really, really simple thing. It seems like somebody should be able to say, hey, I love this, and make some statement, some poem, some pretty picture, something that tries to get at how much they love something. And then somebody else should come along and say, wow, you did that. That really, I know what you're trying to get at. That's the way I feel about that too. There's some kind of like very simple, primitive communion and communication that's taking place in the context of making art objects. And it seems like that if necessary, someone else could come along and say to their friend, you know, hey, come on and look at this thing. It's really cool. And it seems to me that's what the role of this person that is known today as the art critic should be. Should help somebody else appreciate this spontaneous expression of love that an artist is making about something in the world. Something gets a little bit complicated in all of this. I don't know what happened. It's got the as human beings to complicate things.
No kidding. I think the key word in what you said is the art critic is supposed to help someone find something that they might enjoy looking at. You know, it's very much a, hey, look at this thing. But as the subject matter gets increasingly sophisticated, and of course, art is 100% artificial. It's not like, hey, did you see the sunset last night? It's more like, hey, look at this. You know, the first time I saw that, I thought he was still doing what he was doing 10 years ago. And then I realized it looks the same, but he's into a whole different bag. And it's really incredible that somebody who was doing that 10 years ago could be doing this now. You know, that would get me wanting to go see a drawing, even if I didn't, you know what the guy was doing. And it's that's the sort of the helping part of what you were saying, that you can't just say, hey, check it out, it's really great. I mean, you can, but a lot of people are going to check it out, which means glance at it. And they're going to say, well, that doesn't look like anything to me. Thanks. You know, I guess that's not my kind of art. Whereas the critic is in a position where he can say, you know, this particular painting is, you know, the culmination of this particular process for an artist who is into these kinds of values. And his work has been evolving in a very interesting direction for the last few years. And if you go in there and look at this aspect or that aspect of the painting, you'll find something really interesting is going on there. And then if you give it some more time, you may find that you really, really like it as much as I do. Or in some cases, a critic may say you will find these to be absolutely fascinating because of what they're doing. Or the artist is doing this really fascinating thing, but it's very difficult to see, and not very many people, you know, that I've spoken to have been able to see what he's up to. There's a very refined and acquired taste required. And, you know, and there's a full spectrum in a dozen different dimensions where the critic can be helping someone to find what's interesting or valuable or successful about a work of art without necessarily, you know, ever talking about the same thing twice.
Because it's education. It's like, and I think it's fast to me, it's even more fascinating. Like if I go see an exhibit of paintings that I absolutely love right off the bat, I just, you know, I'm moved by, they're fantastic. It's not quite as significant to me to read a review of it. But if I go and see a work that I just don't get, then almost invariably, if I read a good art critic's interpretation of that work, I will see through different eyes, and right. I will be able to see from a different angle, and that's expansive to me, and that's thrilling. And even if I might still wind up not feeling like I totally get it or not even liking that particular piece of work, I will have grown from it and I will feel like it's been a valuable thing for me to interact yeah. with that work yeah. of art.
Well, I think that's why it's important to sort of differentiate art criticism from movie criticism. In a sense, a movie is placing itself in front of the public and saying, pay for a ticket and we're going to give you what you paid for, which is entertainment, and that's a very specific kind of art. Whereas an art critic is in an area where generally people are not paying for it, they're not doing it for entertainment per se. They're trying to find something below the surface. To know that someone likes or doesn't like a piece isn't particularly relevant in art criticism. Whereas if you're familiar with a critic, if Gene Siskel, rest in peace, says, I couldn't stand that movie, and you've read 800 of his reviews, then you may think, well, I'm going to love it. If he can't stand it, I'll definitely love it. So it's useful. Or you may think like him and feel if he doesn't like it, you won't. An art critic can do that to a certain extent if he's really well established and people know his tastes and prejudices and things like that. But I think the art critic has a much, much more profound responsibility, which really is to educate the public about the work that he's describing, because in most cases, the public hasn't seen it. And in most cases, the public won't see it unless the critic says something to stimulate them. And it's sort of his part of his responsibility to the field that he's a member of to get people interested in it.
To get them to even go to the gallery in the first place and have an experience on their own.
And he's responsible to the audience he's addressing to help them out.
Yeah,
I mean, if he's addressing PhDs in art history, that's one type of criticism. If he's addressing the general public that is not that acquainted with contemporary art, for instance, mm-hmm. that's a different audience that he has a responsibility to, and there's in-betweens.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if I were reviewing a show for a room full of PhDs in art history, I would start with the library, and it would take me a month to write the review. And even then, I'd be very cautious about reading it too.
There's a critic named Gilbert Rolfe who he said he was very worried about being wrong and worse, being influentially wrong in his criticism. And I have a quote by him. He said, "It may be the case that your interpretation of the work is entirely wrong, but conceivably so influential as to color the way in which the work is seen even by succeeding generations, so that you may in fact both be the one to recognize the importance of the work and the person responsible for consigning it to infinite misreading."
Yeah.
So it is a great responsibility, as it is for any educator,
right,
to be as open in the way that you approach your role, and honest, and be a person of integrity in, what is the role of an art critic? Like we've been saying, it's to educate people. And also, a bigger aspect of the role of an art critic is to inspire people to make art a part of their lives. And
Well, I think it's one of those areas where the old adage of don't judge something till you've walked so many miles in that guy's moccasins. Before.
Right.
In other words, I think that you need to do your homework before you make before you talk about anyone's artwork. You have to be able to try to see the piece of work through the eyes of the artist that created it, understand what he's after, what he's attempting to communicate. And that takes involvement on the part of the mm-hmm. critic with the contemporary art scene, and particularly knowledge about where each artist is coming from.
Yeah.
Then even if you don't even like it, you can personally, you can because as a curator, there are things that I don't particularly move me with my particular aesthetic. You know, there are certain precise things that just tickle me, personally, and yet I have a deep appreciation for almost everything going on out there because I allow myself to get inside the eyes and the heart of the artist that's created this thing. I try to do justice to the fact that somebody has spent 30 years making this stuff and gotten to this point in his career, and I want to do justice to him by attempting to get inside him and see what he's doing. And I usually have a great appreciation for the work, and I can judge it more on whether I feel he's accomplishing at this point his intentions or not. Maybe he's getting a little bit off of his point, and we can talk about that. But if he wants to show it, usually he feels that it's out of, this is something he wants to share. And so I got to figure out what it is he's trying to share.
Right. Well, and taking it even a step further and even out of criticism into the general category of art appreciation. When I was living next door to the Met and going in there constantly, I was looking at literally thousands of, quote, great paintings. I mean, paintings that very experienced art historians were pretty much in agreement were among the best ever done. And I didn't like most of them. You know, they were from a different era, from many different eras, in styles that I couldn't relate to, with content that I couldn't relate to. I mean, I was only, you know, 10, 12 years old. And I was looking at these things naively. And from a naive perspective, most of them were just busy. They weren't, I didn't know about composition. I didn't understand what someone was doing. I didn't even know that, you know, in the Renaissance, they started doing intentional perspective. And I wasn't thinking about the difference between one-point and two-point perspective. And some of the amazing paintings I've seen since then, where the perspective is totally wrong, but it looks fine. You know, the eye can't see it that way in the real world, but it still works on the canvas. So in that naive frame of mind, you know, I can only relate to whether I like it or not. But the question that was always in my mind was, why is this considered so great that it's in a, you know, 150-pound gold-plated frame and hanging, you know, in this gigantic room in the biggest art museum in the United States at the time? And, you know, what is so great about it? And I was baffled, and I spent many, many days, you know, in total bafflement. But of course, the stuff is also stimulating, and it's terribly, terribly refined. So I would go through the Met and spend time with the paintings, and then in my bafflement, I'd, you know, retreat to the knights in armor and the Egyptian wing and things like that, where I could relate to the little dolls and the tiny boats and things like that. But that question of, you know, why does somebody else think this is so good is one that I think is really important. And it's, if somehow people could be encouraged just to ask that question whenever they see a work of art that's on display. I mean, if you stumble across one, doesn't matter, you can ignore it. But if it's hanging in a gallery, and if it's in a gallery where people don't hang very many things, and it's been selected, then you've got to ask yourself, why has it been selected? And of course, you know, you may conclude it's been selected because the painter, you know, is the guy who owns the gallery. Or it's been selected because, you know, the painter paid the guy who owns the gallery thousands of dollars. Or it's been selected because it sells, and the gallery is a commercial gallery, and they hang what they can sell. There's lots of reasons, but it would be nice to consider what they are. And that's what I liked about Jim Shrosbury's work, is that you look at it, if you've never seen it before, and you think, what the heck is that? And then you just sort of have to ask, how could that be important? And if you ask that question and then give it a little time, it'll do something, and you'll have an interesting experience because he did put a lot into it. It's not just a funny little piece of junk on the wall.
But I also had the personal experience of being able to open people's eyes to that particular work.
Oh, sure.
There were people who couldn't see it, and there was people, even after I talked, who couldn't see it either. But there were some people who I was able to shift the attention to the kinds of places that the artist was working in, and especially to the way I see it. You know, some people saw Jim Shrosby's work as just some sticks and some balls and some wire on the wall, and that's what they saw. Well, I don't see that. I see forms in space, and I see illusory space, infinite space, and I see the entire wall being infinite space enlivened by these little forms, and I see delicate drawing with these materials. And I bring my whole background as an appreciator of art to it, and I was able to like pull people in, and they would like be raving. They'd be saying, I this is so great, you've opened my eyes to this thing. And I was just the enthusiastic curator. But I could see what role someone who's writing for a newspaper or for a magazine could do for the interested public.
Yeah,
because it's a great service to spark that curiosity in the viewer to want to know more. And if it's an old classic work like you saw in the Metropolitan Museum, you can go to many books, find words from the artist himself describing, you know, what he was doing in the, and they're almost invariably, when you do that kind of research and find out what was in the artist's mind or heart when he or she produced that work, it opens you up and makes you see things you never would have seen before, absolutely never would have seen before, and that's always a wonderful thing.
I was thinking also that, to my mind, criticism is by definition contemporary, because if it's not a contemporary piece, then you have books about it, you have biographies of the artist, you can look at the work knowing more about the artist than any critic ever did at the time it was painted. And you know, that's art history and art appreciation, and maybe in some scholarly sense it still gets called art criticism, but seems to me you don't need a critic if it's somebody who's been around and they're gone, and there is already a, you know, bunch of books on the subject. What you need a critic for is to put something in perspective, and that's going to be in the context of, you know, the genre that it represents, or the evolution of the artist and what he's been doing before and is now doing, and give a sense of where he's going with it, or how it fits into other contemporary work that's being done. But to judge contemporary work on the basis of historical work, you know, it doesn't make as much sense to me. Obviously, it has a historic context, and that is important. But I guess the thing is judgment. It's not, the critic isn't judging the art. He's presenting the art. He's sort of like the guy standing outside the gallery, you know, waving people in.
Because if it's a judgment, people are going to be prejudiced before they even go into the gallery. Mm-hmm. Like if you read the little art criticisms in a magazine like The New Yorker, and if you're a person who really wants to be hip and cool and, you know, up to the moment in your knowledge of art, you're going to pay attention to what those little reviews say to find out what you should like and what you shouldn't like.
Right.
If a critic is, some sophisticated critic in the New Yorker magazine is saying, this isn't even worth your time.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody who would even love those pieces won't even give it the time, won't even want to be seen in that gallery because the critic has put it in a category right off the bat. And that's a great disservice to people's innocent and open relationship to art in general.
That's where the critic has become an arbiter of taste, and he's no longer a critic. He's a packager, and he doesn't know it, or
of
hopefully.
Fashions, you know, same as clothing fashions. Yeah. It's
this is hip, this is not.
It's very much like that. And the critic,
who's cool today.
Oftentimes writers for magazines and newspapers and stuff, the eyes that they're reflecting, their job is to have their eyes be the eyes and ears of the average reader. And to sell more newspapers, oftentimes, they're saying what they think that reader wants to hear.
Right, right. And the alternative is they train their eyes to be the ones who can see what's most hip. And so, you know, the readers turn to them to find out what to look at and what not to look at.
I think it would be interesting to have, like they have political debates, to have art debates and have a panel of six or seven people interpreting a certain or giving their responses to a certain, all educated people in the arts, you know, but people with different tastes talking about the same works of art. I think that would be very educational and fascinating and would spark a dialogue between these people and a dialogue between possibly the audience who then asks questions to various groups on this
panel.
It's
hard to imagine putting five of the top critics in the same room together to go at it that way, because normally they sit in their own little fiefdom.
Yeah, they bring firearms, I think, when they do that kind of thing.
But I think it could be, I mean, if it wasn't just people staunchly holding to their opinion and fighting against the others, if it actually was approached as a dialogue to learn another way of looking at the same thing, that could be a very enriching experience.
A lot of the people that I've known who don't like something, though, wouldn't want to spend much time explaining why they don't like it. And conversely, a lot of the things that I like, I really don't want to explain why I like them either. I mean, I can only just start touching on it, and then it starts to diminish the thing that I'm liking and turn it into something I can describe.
That would be useful to other people. I mean, like, I love to hear from other people why they like something that I don't like.
Yeah, well, sometimes I can say why
I
like it. I just mean that, for instance, when there was a set of, I guess, four paintings that Jim Shrosbury had down by towards the stairs, and I kind of knew his work from the Des Moines show the year before, and I a couple of pieces he had at Gallery 51, and I thought, okay, I know what he does, I really like it. And these pieces had moved on in another direction, and so I wasn't relating to them as easily as the others. And then I saw the paintings, and I look at them, and I thought, I don't know what he's doing there, I don't see the connection. And I went back to the sculptures, and I don't know if it was a couple of days, but I finally decided, all right, I'm going to practice what I preach. I don't know what he's doing with them. They didn't reach me. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him and thought, yeah, okay, you know, I could take it or leave it. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to invest some time and operate on the faith that somebody like Jim has put enough into these things to make it worth my while investing some time. And hopefully I will get a payoff. So I just stood in front of them and looked at them. Actually, I should say I watched them, because I didn't really look at them. I watched them as if they were going to do something. Mm-hmm. And still nothing much happened, although I found that I really liked the fact that they were all different distances apart from each other, and that was more the sculptural gym. And then I started staring at one by itself and gave it like 5 minutes, and I suddenly saw something that I really liked about it that reminded me of what he was doing with the sculptures. Mm. And then I looked for that in the other three, and I found it in all four of them, and I felt very satisfied. And I felt that now I knew why he had done those particular ones as paintings, because what he was doing with them, although it was still the gym thing, it was something you can't do with sculpture. Mm-hmm. It was something that had to be done with that medium. Yeah. And so, that was really very satisfying. And it kind of restored my faith in the artist, because in this case, you know, I was thinking, yeah, what's he doing? I don't think he's doing what I liked. If I'd been a gallery owner, selling his stuff, I would have said, do more of the blue ones, you know, or whatever. And well, here I would have missed the paintings entirely.
Well, what's interesting about you, that story of yours, is that when I first went through his exhibit, and I was also used to the sculpture pieces, and I saw those paintings, they knocked my socks off. It was the paintings that opened. Immediately I looked at those paintings, and there were worlds and worlds and worlds and theatricality and layers and things from those paintings. Yeah. They spoke to me very deeply right from the start. Yeah. And intrigued me. And I stood in front of them also for long periods of time, many times,
yeah,
to just have more of a relationship with those paintings.
Yeah.
So is it the Harold Rosenblum quote that we ought to hear?
Robert Rosenblum, New York Robert critic, Rosenblum. He said, I think art criticism should be out of love, not hate. That was his. And actually, a lot of art critics have said things like that. One of them, René Ricard, said, I am not an art critic, I am an enthusiast. I like to drum up interest in artists who have somehow inspired me to be able to say something about their work.
Hear, hear.
Well, what's the final word on art criticism today?
Well, I guess it has to come from someone who, or I mean, ideally, should come from someone who is into the field of art that he's criticizing, and hopefully who knows something about the things that are being done in that field. And since I think it's intrinsically contemporary, and of course that's debatable, I would think it would be someone who not only, you know, is an enthusiast of contemporary art, but is, you know, has an enthusiasm about what these specific contemporary artists are currently doing. And I think, you know, in a lot of cases, it's worth knowing whether a work is a recent work by that artist or not. And that often is, you know, very relevant to what the artist is trying to do. And sometimes two paintings from two different periods in the same artist's life can be, you know, very revealing, and a critic is the only one who's going to get that across to you.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.